Hey, how's it going, everybody? It's your host, Dylan Conroy, and we are back again with another edition of the Ad Podcast. And so excited today. We actually have one of my clients, the Chief Marketing Officer, Stephanie Freed from Fandom on the show today. In full transparency, we have worked with Fandom on several influencer marketing campaigns at the Social Standard over the years, but this is actually the first time I'm getting to meet Stephanie in person. So Stephanie, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Of course, thanks for having me.
Yeah, definitely. So the first thing I'd love to just kick off with is your background. You know, we don't have to go through every notch in your belt, but I think you have a very interesting background. You don't always see chief marketing officers come up from the quantitative and the research side of the house. So from listening to most of your interviews, I know you've told this story a million times, but I think especially for performance marketers and people who are kind of coming up from the quant side of the house, I think it would be interesting to kind of hear a little bit about your career and then specifically how some of those roles kind of led you for this perfect position as the CMO of Fandom. So do you want to walk us through it a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. And I'll try to do it a little bit differently because I think I'm constantly thinking about my research and analytics background and how that actually plays a role in, you know, the structure of my team, the decisions that we make, how we think through business problems and opportunities, and how I think valuable that is for me also in terms of my relationship with like our CFO, right? In terms of really understanding the numbers of the business in, I think, a really unique way. And so I feel like everyone should come from research and analytics and you know, go into marketing. But yeah, I think for me, it certainly wasn't an intentional move. But I think that the reason that I went into research is because I was really interested in how people make decisions. I was interested in what made someone want to buy a product, what made someone want to stay at a specific hotel, what made someone want to go to a specific location. Like, what are the things that resonate with them? And certainly it's a combination of personal needs and attributes of those products as well as brand, right? Because you can make decisions that are very brand specific without even knowing it. But what are those things that are underlying those decisions with consumers? And I was really interested in that. And that's why I went into research and did a lot of research for CPG companies, financial services companies, and media companies around what products and services they should introduce and how should they package them, how should they price them, how should they talk about them to be compelling to consumers. So obviously, you know, even from that moment, I was, you know, kind of working for marketers from the angle of understanding what they should do and make that as data-driven as possible. But, you know, I think now there's a lot of conversation about art and science and the perfect blend of art and science, and you can't go too heavy towards the data, which I do think is true. Although I would kind of add to that, that there is it's using the data, but with context, right, of the why behind those answers, because sometimes the why actually would send you in a different direction based on that context than the data. So it's not that you're moving away from the data, it's that you're actually just having a more holistic understanding of what it's trying to tell you. But so that's kind of what I've done and how I've moved in my career, and I think taken on certainly initially more analytically focused functions like performance marketing and SEO and opportunities to optimize our traffic and, you know, bring in more people that then we could then monetize, for example, at Discovery. And then I continued to kind of take over more of those roles across different channels of how we talk to our audiences in different ways across different platforms and understood how all of those different components played a role in how consumers thought about us and our brands. So whether that's social or CRM or general brand management, design, experiential, all of those pieces are components of how consumers think about us, why they come to us. And so it's been kind of a natural evolution in terms of taking on those roles. They all kind of come together to tell that story to consumers.
Yeah, I love that. So one of the first things that you jumped off with when you were brought on as the CMO of Fandom is you went through, I believe you called it a branding, not a rebrand, but a branding, because you guys had never really focused on your brand before. And you've also referred to Fandom as one of those huge brands that not your everyday consumer really identifies with or knows. Can you talk a little bit about why it was important to do that branding exercise when you first arrived and kind of how that's going and how you are changing that perception of Fandom being the biggest brand that nobody's ever heard of?
Yeah, you've done a lot of research. I'm very impressed. So yes, so I did want it to be less of a rebrand and more of just a brand. And brand is something that we think about and we talk about a lot here, because there's also the question of how important is the brand? Like, what does the brand do for us? And what is, you know, there is the kind of umbrella brand of Fandom. There is Fandom wikis. And within our wikis, there's brands like Wikipedia, which is the Star Wars wiki, for example, which kind of trades on the Star Wars brand, which is obviously already incredibly strong. We have now GameSpot, we have Metacritic, TD Guide is a brand that's been around for a long time and probably needs a bit of a refresh around all of the things that we do with it today. And then we have a PC gaming brand called Fanatical as well. But with Fandom, I think that the kind of tricky piece of that, or interesting or unique piece of that, is that we already have 300 million people coming to our wiki platform every month.
Wow.
Very few of them know the Fandom brand. So they come to us because they have a question. They go to Google. They search for, I would say, Luke Skywalker, because I'm always so impressed that we're first for Luke Skywalker. It feels meaningful to me. And we're going to be first. And we're going to be first because we have the best content on Luke Skywalker anywhere. And so the reason we win is because the quality of our content is so rich and so deep and is the best. So we actually don't need the brand to bring someone in. The brand that people think about when they're searching is Google, and that's okay. They go to Google, they do that search, and then we're going to answer that query for them because Google recognizes that we're the best source. So the question is, what's the role that brand plays there, right? Do we want to have a brand because we don't want people to go to Google? Do we want to have a brand because when people go to Google and they're deciding between the links, they're more likely to decide on the Fandom link because they know that that's a high quality SERP for them? Or, you know, do we want to have more power in other channels, like social following, for example? They're more likely to sign up for an email from us, a newsletter, right? And there's other benefits, even on platform, in terms of trust, right? Mm-hmm. If you, you know, want to go down the funnel and say, all right, you love Star Wars, just to stick with that, we're going to sell you a Darth Vader mug, right? Is that more powerful because it comes from a brand that they already feel connected to and has quality and trust associated with it?
Yeah, I love that. And that kind of leads me into one of my next questions. Yeah. As you start to build in, you know, this brand identity with Fandom, and you guys are really launching into direct to consumer in your own way with Fanatical, with your PC gaming division. And I also, I believe, read that you guys launched in a tabletop gaming offering at Fandom. So is part of the investment in brand also building a relationship with that consumer audience where you guys are monetizing in ways other than just advertising revenue that you make, or data, things that you've kind of traditionally been known at to monetize through a publisher relationship?
Yeah. So I would say it depends, and it varies across the brand. So you mentioned we did have a tabletop gaming business called Dungeons & Dragons Beyond, the number one digital tool set for D&D gameplay. We sold that business to Hasbro early last year, mid last year. And you know, we grew a really amazing business there, a lot of great people on that team. Obviously, the D&D brand is a very big brand and has been for a long time. And we were licensing that brand for that product. So the brand did a lot of the heavy lifting, although I would say our strength in terms of like the best digital companion came from a lot of the efforts that we did in content marketing and newsletters and community engagement involvement with those fans. We did also a lot of paid marketing and different marketing programs around that business to drive kind of, you know, the value props that we had for that brand. So that was much more of a traditional like brand management business and team where we were thinking about the USPs every day, what we could deliver, how that came through in our messaging, in our content, and in our relationships with those fans. So had a much clearer kind of brand guide, tone of voice, USPs, et cetera, to develop that relationship. And that was a subscription as well as digital goods business. So we were relying on people to want to stay connected to us directly in an ongoing way, keeping them informed with new features and really building like a community there. On Fanatical, it is a little bit more general because we don't have there, that's not a specific game or brand that we're able to kind of trade on a little bit in the way we did obviously with D&D. And that really goes across PC games. And there we really stand for value for our customers. And so that's what they're looking for with us is kind of the best deals in PC gaming. And so that's kind of the value that we provide and deliver. We do a lot with affiliate marketing there, looking at testing some influencer as well. We do a lot of really amazing like mystery bundles as well. And there's a lot of like reveals and openings that actually ends up driving a lot of traffic. Wow. And purchases to Fanatical. But there I wouldn't say, you know, our brand, I would say it's well known among those who purchase with us in that audience. The penetrate, you know, it's not a 70% awareness brand. But it's strong among, you know, the audience that we have. And one of the things that we're trying to do there and one of our areas of focus is not just acquiring new customers and audiences for that right now game purchase, but being their source in an ongoing way and developing much greater CRM capabilities and a better relationship with those gaming fans as well.
Very cool. So, you have mentioned that fandom, like many, you know, digital businesses, was a huge beneficiary of, you know, the COVID bump, so to speak, that you had an over 40% increase in traffic during COVID. You know, a lot of people were, you know, not only, you know, I became a gamer again during COVID. You know, I hadn't owned a system since college, and I bought an Xbox and, you know, co-play with my daughters and got into Fortnite and stuff like that. So I feel like COVID really brought a lot of people back into the category, at least from a gaming perspective. So how do you capitalize on that kind of massive growth, and how do you retain those users and keep them coming back to the brand and stay in your ecosystem?
Yeah. So it's interesting. I'm glad you asked that question. I don't think I've talked about this before, but I think there are a few different factors at play that we don't necessarily talk about as much. But when COVID happened, it was also actually when all of the streamers started launching in force. So we had Netflix and we had Hulu, but then we got Disney Plus, right? Discovery came in, HBO Max, and we started to have much more in Paramount, CBS All Access, Paramount Plus, and all of a sudden there was a lot more content as well. So I think it was two different pieces happening at the same time. There was, number one, a lot of people who, number one, were stuck inside. Number two, I think, felt kind of isolated. And scared and wanted to escape a little bit into content and into different worlds. And then we just had a lot more content. So even with the kind of pausing of production that happened, there was so much content available at that time for people to consume. I think it basically made them kind of start getting more into it and back into it. And a lot of that behavior actually remained, you know, even after COVID. is the time spent consuming video content and spending time on the streaming services continued to increase, even when people were, you know, leaving the house, but it took over from other activities. And so we did see that continue to increase, and I think, you know, even deepen in certain categories. So I don't know if you've continued to stay into gaming. But I think a lot of people who rediscovered gaming, and especially those who found a really interesting kind of generational connection of people starting to game with their kids and introducing them to franchises that they loved. And then those franchises started also coming back. And like Zelda is a great example of that, with, you know, new games that are connected to those franchises. And so now I think you're getting a lot more of that time spent with people's kids and other things around entertainment and gaming that might not have been before. And so we've seen that continue, and we never lost that traffic basically as a result of those factors.
I love that. And then you mentioned, you know, the brief hiatus for production for COVID kind of creating a little bit of a backlog on content. Wasn't as bad with theatrical and in the studio space. But my question is around specifically around the writer strike. Is that, do you believe that that's going to create any kind of a lag as far as, you know, content? Like how long will it take? You also mentioned that there's so many options now with the streamers. So I feel like we're paying more money than we did pre-cable. And now, you know, there's this lag in production. Is there going to be a lag in content from the writer's strike as well? And I think I have a little technical difficulty I have to fix on the camera. If you want to go ahead, I'm going to put it to one camera for a second.
Okay. So for the writer's strike, you know, we are, and you know, the actor's strike, which obviously is still ongoing. A lot of the immediate impact was around broadcast television and the, you know, season starting this year. And now it's not, sometimes it thinks that I don't exist in this room. Maybe. And so the broadcast season was affected, you know, obviously for the writer's strike and the actor strike. The content that does the best on fandom is the really deep kind of imagined worlds and franchises. And a lot of the time we don't, you know, have as much depth in terms of like network broadcast shows as we do certainly around longer term dramas and other kind of streaming programs and shows, as well as gaming. And so we haven't seen really any hit from that. Certainly as titles have started to shift a little bit into next year, where even things that they might have completely ready to go and they're waiting for the actors to be able to promote them, because that's such a big piece of their marketing plans these days. We've seen a few of those move, but they haven't been substantial. So I think, you know, we'll see what happens in terms of how much of a delay we see and how much things are moved. We don't expect it to hurt, for the most part, anything in gaming. There have been some voice actors in gaming who have now kind of joined the strike. But voice actors in gaming aren't as well known, with a few exceptions. And so that's not necessarily as important to hold up game development, to wait for a specific voice actor to be able to do that. So we don't expect a big hit on gaming, which is our largest category, or anime, which is another big category for us and is mostly international, where we don't see the impact. But we will, of course, be monitoring that and see if things change as the strike, you know, goes longer.
Nice. So in another interview, you've talked about the importance of experiential. So, you know, getting in front of fans in the real world. Fandom is known for having the most sought after events at San Diego Comic-Con, for example. How are these in real life extensions an important part of engaging with your audience in the real world? How does that create a better feedback loop with your audiences?
Yeah. So I love live experiences, certainly just personally, as well as for an incredible way to engage and immerse people in a very different way than they can do online. I think particularly coming out of COVID, it was interesting. We had a strong, you know, events and experiences business prior to COVID. It was actually growing, you know, substantially. And then COVID happened and all of a sudden no one was leaving their houses or apartments anymore. And I actually think since COVID has ended, events have come back even stronger than they were before because people missed celebrating and being with other people in real life. I also think a lot of activations have gotten a lot more immersive and interesting. There's a lot of pop-ups that happen around different IP where you go in and, you know, like there was a Barbie cafe here where, you know, you go and you sit in the, you know, the waitresses are, you know, characters from Barbie, and there's all kinds of merch you can buy, and the drinks are themed and the food is themed, and there's surfboards, and it's like you feel like you're in this world in a really fun way. And by the way, all of the kids are dressed up in the Barbie pink, and they're like, you know, living it, like being a part of that. And I think those experiences where you can celebrate your fandoms and see other people who are also celebrating the things you love is a really incredible emotional feeling that's very different from kind of sitting, you know, in front of your computer and looking up some things around, you know, the wikis, even gaming, you know, with your friends online, which obviously creates connection, but not in the same way. The Comic-Con party, which we're really lucky to be able to do the opening night every year, is just a great way to celebrate across fandoms. We had great partners this year in Paramount Plus and EA, where we were able to bring some immersive activations into the party as well with real gameplay. And, you know, having that as part of the experience and bringing that to life and having people come onto our gold carpet in their incredible cosplay and being very loud and proud about what they love is really amazing. Everyone, very similar to fandom, what we stand for is welcome there because they're a fan. It doesn't matter anything else about them or how they identify, they're a fan. They're a fan and they're celebrated for that. And it's a very like welcoming, wonderful, immersive thing to be a part of. And I love that fandom gets to play a really important role in that, in, you know, helping people come together and do that. And I certainly hope that we can do that a lot more in a lot of other convention settings. Certainly DreamHack will be there as well coming up in December.
Very cool. So I want to pivot the conversation a little bit to the data side of the house, which I know is an area that you love talking about. When I was doing the research, I thought it was very exciting that, you know, you guys unlock larger, you know, research and data privileges and or, you know, insights to your advertisers as they kind of scale up their partnerships with fandom from an investment perspective. But what I also found fascinating was that you guys actually leverage that data not just for advertisers, but for, you know, the producers and the owners of the IP, that they potentially can use that data to maybe surface a character for a spinoff or to highlight somebody or to even change story arcs. So I was wondering if, without breaking any privileges, could you talk about an interesting story or a meeting with a client where you guys provided an insight that maybe, you know, changed the track of how the show developed in future seasons or future episodes?
Yeah. So I can't talk about any specific one, but I'll talk generically about it because you're right. It's something, it's probably the thing that I'm the most passionate about because it kind of brings together all the things that I really love, which is entertainment. Personally, I love television, and creating programs that connect people, entertain people, let them escape, let them find others that they can connect with in really unique ways. And the ability to do that through having a better understanding of what's going to resonate and with who is really like the key to unlocking great content and great experiences, right? And the way that we always did that, you know, was fine, right? Like pilot testing and focus groups, right? And, you know, saying like, does this resonate? What do you think about this character? And, you know, you might notice, I notice it a lot more, but, you know, you watch a pilot of a show and then you watch the next episode and all of a sudden a character's personality is like pretty different than it was in the first one, right? In the first episode, you felt like they were supposed to be evil and now all of a sudden they're kind. Or all of a sudden, someone's not in it anymore, right? Or they're replaced by someone. And that was all like based on research, right? Of, you know, oh, that, you know, the group didn't like this or the group, you know. But what if you can do all of that in advance, right? Like, what if you can basically build the storyline and the plot and arc based on things that you know are going to resonate because you've seen like audiences and you know kind of the formula of what's interesting to people, right? And there is a secret sauce and, in all of that, but what if you could do that and kind of build, and then as you go and the story, you know, evolves, what are the things that people like and what's resonating, not among 12 people in a room, but among millions of people who are visiting the wiki, like what characters are they visiting and what, like what about their storyline and what's the overlap with the other characters, right? What are the kind of shipping pages or relationship pages that are getting a lot of traffic and interest and plot lines and storylines. And we have all of this data in the millions of data points. And so, you know, the reason I was so excited about coming to Fandom is the ability to use that to help, you know, produce better content, better games, better shows, better movies, better anime. And so we do that with our partners. And we do that at different phases, sometimes right at the beginning. And I'd say where we do that a lot, particularly, is around adaptations. So when there is a book or a game that's being developed for the first time in a new format, so TV or movies, right? We have a really strong existing understanding of that story. That even the creators of that game or that book probably don't know. So they've sold the rights to Paramount or Netflix or Apple, whatever it may be, right? And now they have the rights to tell that story, and they want to do that in a really authentic way, right? That doesn't alienate the fan base, that hopefully nurtures that fan base and hopefully grows the fan base, right? But they need to have a really strong understanding. So a lot of the time where we help out is helping even identify what might be that good fit, where, you know, we did a list of, you know, top games that are waiting to be adapted to TV and movies, and what are the best streamer fits for all of these different gaming IPs. And they were all different for different types of games. And then what about that resonates? And so we've been involved in sharing data, deep dive data from the wikis, having interviews with the admins and editors who are super fans, who knew every single detail of every storyline, as well as doing additional research with our fans, because we can basically get to, you know, any tiny niche audience to really understand what is inspiring about that IP and what they want to see from that IP. And that creates better programming. There's one case where we did that. We were involved in the development. It was a movie, and the movie did very well. Would it have done very well without us? I don't know. I like to say no, but I also really enjoyed the movie.
That's cool.
And so we've had a lot of great partnerships from that perspective, and I just love being able to kind of unlock hopefully better content for fans.
Yeah, I think I didn't even realize Watching a prior interview with you, that TV show The Last of Us was even based on a game. You know, sometimes you don't know, even if you're a gamer, or, and it was still an incredibly cool show without having any of the context behind what the prior IP was based on. And I know you don't like scary movies, so we can move on.
I don't. Yeah, I'm scared of last. I've seen just bits and pieces. But...
All right. Very cool. So the next question I'd like to talk a little bit about, you know, you as a CMO have two very important audiences that you're marketing to. And we talked about it a little before. There's the consumer audience and the fans and, you know, the folks that make up your 300 million users. But then you also have a B2B brand to manage. You have to manage your perception out in advertising land and amongst the media agencies and brands. Probably most importantly in your endemic space of gaming, film, and television. But I think you also made a really exciting point in another interview that sometimes when brands are partnering with some of these IP holders, like an automotive company partnering with Marvel per se, a lot of times these non-endemic advertisers are probably at a loss to even what they know. They want to be part of some of these big IPs and franchises because they know that it kind of gussies up their product and makes it more exciting. But they don't really know how and when to activate around that audience. So can you talk a little bit about, you know, how you help those marketers that are non-endemic kind of enter this world of fandom? You know, how do they take advantage of this audience in a way that's authentic and really brings that partnership to life versus maybe potentially doing something that could be looked at as cheesy or, you know, off mark?
Yeah. So, you know, we always say that every brand should have a fan strategy. And, you know, a lot of the non-endemic brands that we work with, you know, certainly are, I would say gaming is a great example. They all want to kind of be involved in some way in gaming, whether it's creating their own game or reaching gamers in some, you know, authentic way through either working, you know, with the game developer or trying to make that kind of a part of, you know, their organic, you know, messaging. A lot of, obviously, you know, the big gaming companies, they do a lot of research on gaming, right? They spend a lot of time getting to know gamers. They have a lot of first party data as well around what resonates with their audiences, et cetera. The non-endemic brands, the CPG brands, the auto brands, they don't do a lot of research on gamers. They do a lot of research on people in the market to buy a car. And so, you know, we can share a lot of intelligence around, you know, why people game, right? How they connect, you know, what it kind of does for them. Are they using it to learn? Are they using it to connect with parents, with children, with friends? You know, are they using it for pure entertainment? Like, what are the kind of motivators of why people game and the different types of games? To begin with, obviously there's PC gaming and console gaming and mobile gaming, but within there, there's tons of different genres of types of games. So, you know, understanding that audience and understanding the overlap with their brands and understanding where they're going to kind of fit in terms of, you know, finding that right audience. And then certainly in terms of like how they should do that and how they should connect. So you don't want to do that ever in like an intrusive way, right? Or be a barrier or a blocker to getting to information or to gameplay. And you want them to kind of support and hopefully fund a lot of the things that gamers are looking to do. So being able to give free items, you know, for in-game play from advertisers, you know, hopefully doesn't have the brand's name across the front of it, but they get credit from being associated and giving value, right, to fans based on the value that they know that they're going to get. So what is it that fans want, and then how can they provide that in a way where it's clear that they're providing that value, but they're not putting their name all over it in an authentic way.
It's not just label suit.
Correct.
So this next question will dive a little bit into, the work that we've done together, but for the advantage of, you know, folks out there that are listening from the creator economy, folks that represent influencers or work with creators in some way. Fandom has a very interesting, you know, breadth of types of creators that you could tap into, right? You know, you guys have, you know, not unlike other publishers like Barstool Sports or others, you know, you have a network of folks that have built large social followings that are kind of affiliated with the fandom organization, or they're a wiki editor, they're loosely affiliated with your brand. And then you have the folks that are associated with all the different fandoms and different different IP. What is the most important aspect that you guys think about when you decide to work with a creator? Like, what are you really looking for first and foremost in those partnerships? And how do you identify folks that you think would be interesting?
Yeah. I mean, for us, you know, we're trying to think of, you know, what is the story that we're trying to tell? Like, what are we trying to deliver to a fan, right? Around whether it's around a specific IP where the advertising brand is more, you know, sponsoring that, right? And bringing to light the specific aspect of an IP that hasn't kind of lived before, new storylines, new content being developed, and they're supporting that. Or if the stories are really about the advertisers as well and how the advertisers are kind of integrated into that storyline. So, which is public, but, you know, we just did a really interesting campaign for Instagram, for example, Meta, where their messaging within Instagram was part of what they wanted to talk about. And we did that within the frame of how you connect around gaming. So it was within kind of the world of gaming and banter and connection, right? Where we're featuring the product, but in a way that really serves a real purpose. Sometimes you can't do that in, you know, as much of an authentic way. And then we wouldn't necessarily integrate the product because it wouldn't make sense in the story. And so that would be more of like a sponsorship brought to you by type of program. But we think about that first, and then we think about, all right, well, who is best to tell that story? Right? Is that, you know, an expert who knows the ins and outs of every detail of that imagined world, which might be an admin or an editor that we work with? Is that someone who has been writing about that franchise for 20 years and has an opinion about every release? And that might be someone who's on staff in one of our gaming brands. This is what happens when you come into the office. This is why everyone stays home. Right, yeah. You know, or is it someone who's in the community, doesn't work for us, we already know has a voice, an interesting voice or a take, you know, within that IP that's going to either be really fun to watch, it's going to be really interesting, but it's going to, you know, bring that concept or idea to life in a more meaningful way. Sometimes we're looking for, we did a campaign where we wanted to bring kind of, you know, artistic vision and creation around fandoms to life. And we worked with a lot of artists to create, you know, really amazing physical pieces around IPs to give away. So we worked with artists that worked in fandom and fan fiction and bringing things to life. So, you know, we're really looking for a great partner to help us tell those stories. Mm-hmm. And it depends on what the story is, who, you know, the right fit is. But that's basically where we start, is the idea and the concept and the story that we're trying to tell.
Very smart. All right. Well, we're coming down to the final stretch here. So what has you most excited about your role at Fandom, say, over the next 6 months to a year? You know, what is on the horizon that you're focused on right now that you are just super excited to tell the audience watching at home?
Yeah. I think probably what I'm most excited about is, you know, how we bring our brands together. I'll, you know, talk specifically about gaming, which I know I've talked a lot about today, but we, you know, we have 150 million gamers every month just on Fandom. We have GameSpot, which is a leading, you know, gaming editorial brand. Metacritic, which is the leading kind of reviews and ratings platform for gaming. And then we have Fanatico, which is a great PC gaming brand that services millions of customers. You know, how we can bring those pieces together to make things easier for fans, I think, is a big opportunity. You know, we've been spending a lot of time looking at PC gaming in particular because of Fanatical. But the discovery process around what to play, it is tough. There's lots of indie games. There's lots of content out there. And so how do we bring more value to gaming audiences by connecting the dots across our different platforms? And I think we have a lot of opportunity there to really play a role in helping gaming fans find the next game that they're going to love. And so, yeah, that's what we're kind of working on behind the scenes is how we kind of complete that fan journey, you know, within our ecosystem in a more connected way.
Yeah, I love it. You hit on that discoverability component, which I think is so important because, you know, there's so much content out there, whether it's from the streamers or whether it's, you know, on Xbox Game Pass or wherever you get your games, you know, it just to know what to try next is quite a task to go through sometimes. So, and then, you know, I'm always surprised, like when I find a really cool indie gem game that I wasn't, you know, expecting, I was like, where has this been hiding my whole life? Yep. So the discoverability engine to make, you know, people's lives easier to figure out, okay, here's, whether it's editorial driven or algorithmically driven, I think consumers really need that in this sea of content and choices that we have now. Well, Stephanie, such a pleasure to get to meet you, you know, over the show today. Thanks again for the opportunity to partner with you on the campaigns that we've worked together. I hope we get an opportunity to meet at some time in the future in person. And to all the audience at home, if you like this interview, go ahead and give us a subscribe or a follow wherever you're listening to podcast platforms. And also, don't forget to share the episode with a friend if you think some of the insights that Stephanie and I talked about today might be helpful for somebody else. We'll see you again Monday, 1 o'clock West Coast next week. And thanks again for tuning in the show. And Stephanie, thanks so much for coming. Appreciate your time.
Thanks so much.
All right. See you later, everybody.